Okay, so we get to the hospital and we have no clue. We don't know the ethnicity, race, or anything. We just know his name is Dragan Blaze Comstock. And so we get there and my wife goes back first. And I see this giant smile on her face and she holds up this little baby boy and he ends up being this little pale redhead Caucasian boy who, and my whole family's redheads, me, my wife, and all three of my girls. So he looks just like my entire family. And I was like, holy cow. And she's crying, I'm crying, we're smiling, laughing. It's one of those deals where it's like, this was meant to be. So, after lots of snuggling and paperwork, we took him home. You know, he fit right in. He's really laid back. And at the time, he didn't show any signs of anything going wrong with him. It wasn't until a couple months we started noticing he wasn't hitting his milestones like an average baby would. And so we started becoming concerned. So we started getting checkups and come to find out that his mother had actually done drugs as well while pregnant. He was officially diagnosed with severe global delays. And so basically he hits all his milestones way later than average. You know, he just turned 4 a couple days ago and he's still not talking. He gets several services a day, you know, PT, OT, speech. He was in ABA. Like, he had all these services starting pretty much the second he could become mobile, you know, rolling around on the floor. But the thing about him is, no matter what he was going through, no matter what services, the challenges, he was always smiling. Always. Like, he has that smile that will just light up your entire world. And it just shows how it doesn't matter how rough life gets, you know, there's always a way to smile. And he shows us all that. And even today, he's always happy, laughing, smiling. And I just know he's going to talk here. I've been saying this for months now, but he's going to talk and it's going to happen soon. I can just feel it.
I think of you as family. That's how close you are to me.
That's Johnny Stone, a chief petty officer in the U.S. Navy stationed in San Diego, California. He's describing the day that he and his wife, Sarah, picked up their 3-day-old foster son, who's now renamed Jackson. His description of that day and his journey since probably sounds pretty familiar to anyone who's fostered a child. The ambiguity about the child they were fostering, the elation of bringing him into their family, the painful setbacks caused by his biologic parents' own life choices, the paperwork. But most importantly, the unconditional love and their hope for their child's future.
Remember that I'm here for you no matter what you're going through. Yeah, you got me and I got you always.
This is Crazy Good Turns. We tell stories about people who do amazing things for others, and I'm your host, Brad Shaw.
Don't worry about that, 'cause I got your back. Yeah, you got me and I got you always. Always.
This is the second in our 2-part series on the U.S. foster care system in honor of May being Foster Care Month. Our last episode focused on young adults aging out of the foster care system, and today we're taking a look at the other end of the spectrum, kids 5 and under who find themselves in foster care. We'll hear more from Johnny Stone, but let's take some time to learn about another foster parent, Jeff Wieman. Jeff grew up in Seattle, attended the Naval Academy, and spent 8 years in the Navy patrolling the waters of the Persian Gulf and Central and South America. After leaving the Navy in 1998, Jeff worked at a few tech startups and did some consulting. He was the guy always brought in as sort of a process fixer thanks to his systems engineering education at the Naval Academy. He and his wife, Perry Lynn, have 4 kids, 3 from a first marriage and 1 together, but they always wanted more.
I know, call us crazy, had 4, wanted a 5th or a 6th, just because we love kids. That just wasn't in the cards. It didn't work. We had suffered miscarriages and it was just emotionally draining. And so we started looking, hey, we've got this love in our heart for kids. Where else could we help? You know, would we be open to adoption? And hey, if we're open to adoption, let's look at fostering.
So Perry Lynn hit the internet and found an organization in San Diego called Angels Foster Family Network, which most refer to as just Angels. For more than 20 years, Angels has recruited, trained, and certified foster parents and placed children 5 and younger in their care. Its goal was reunification, meaning getting the kids back with their biologic parents. If the parents can't do what's needed to get the child back, then a relative is the second option, followed by an adoptive family. Since its founding, Angels has placed more than 800 young children with foster parents, with 90% finding a permanent solution. In 2013, Jeff and Perry Lynn reached out to Angels to start the certification process. What's involved with becoming a certified foster parent?
you'll hear commonly a lot of paperwork, extensive background checks, and through Angels, there's extensive interviews. And the best way to put it is Angels wants to learn everything about your upbringing, your childhood, your adult life, what's worked, what hasn't worked. Because when you bring a foster child in your home, every one of those children comes with trauma. Trauma from something that happened in their life, whether it was the trauma that brought them into the care of foster care or the trauma that, you know, you may never know about at first. And so knowing your own trauma and your triggers helps greatly when you're caring for foster children.
So in 2013, after all the paperwork, training, and interviews, Jeff and Perry Lynn were ready to become foster parents.
We got a call at about 2:30 in the afternoon saying, we have a six-week-old baby boy. He's at Polinsky, which is the regional shelter here in San Diego. And do you want him? And it's always kind of an odd thing. Do you want him? And just kind of looked at my wife and we said, well, yeah. And so we got in our car and we drove out and we picked him up about 4 o'clock that day. And the real surreal thing is that you walk into this wonderful facility, you walk up to bulletproof glass, I'll be honest, and you show your driver's license and they give you a piece of paper and you sign it. And then lo and behold, out the side door comes a baby in a baby carrier.
So did you know anything about the baby that you were going to foster?
We knew very little, and what they teach you in foster care, especially when you go through the training, is that you can pretty much guarantee that any information you have before you get the child is at least half wrong. In our case, the age was wrong, the name was wrong, the ethnicity was wrong. The only thing that was right was the gender.
So that's more than 50%. Wow.
Exactly, and it's, you know, it's just the circumstances sometimes that when the kids come into care, that it's like the telephone operator game. There's so many people involved that the story really hasn't been fully formed before you as a foster parent arrive on the scene to pick up this child.
The baby's name was Ryder, and while it took some time, Jeff eventually learned that the story of Ryder's placement was complicated.
And I think, you know, looking back on it now too, he should have never come into foster care. And that's because how he came into foster care is his mom was in a car with her boyfriend at the time, and they were pulled over at a traffic stop. His mom had outstanding wants and warrants, and so the police arrested her. The biologic dad, of course, wasn't her boyfriend at the time, but it was the arrest happened in their neighborhood. So he heard about it. He came running over and was standing there with the police officer saying, "That's my son." Unfortunately, the bio mom said, no, he's not. And the police are not going to, of course, try to make that decision. So they have their protocol. And so they took him to the regional shelter. And that's how he entered foster care.
When people come to foster parent training at Angels, they're taught how to establish a relationship with the child's biologic parents. Seldom an easy task. With Ryder's biologic mom now out of the picture, Jeff tried to connect with Ryder's dad, who grew up in one of San Diego's toughest neighborhoods, had been in a gang, and in and out of jail. The first time Jeff talked to Ryder's dad was over the phone. Ryder's dad was in prison.
You pick up the phone, and you can hear the person on the other side even before you put the phone to your ear, and he's already screaming expletives over the phone for us to give him his child back. And so I just, you know, kind of took a deep breath and walked him off the ledge and just said, we're not here to take your child. We're here to care for him, to love on him as you would, so you can do everything possible to get him back. It's kind of ironic. That's how our relationship started out. And then fast forward to last week, his biologic dad and I are still good friends. I'm actually a mentor to him. He's still incarcerated. He should be getting out sometime this year. And we work together to help him. And one of the things that we fell in love with our bio dad was the fact that he had an undying love for his son. We saw that from the first time that we met.
Their relationship flourished. Jeff said that Ryder's father would call from jail twice a day so Ryder, still a baby, could hear his father's voice.
And let's face it, calling from jail is not easy. You got to make sure they're not on lockdown. You've got to have the right privileges. And then, of course, there's all the internal pecking order inside with the inmates on who gets the first phone time. That simple thing created an undying bond between father and son. So that when, fast forward about a year and a half later, when he got out of prison for a short period of time, it only took about 2 days for him and his son to be literally like two peas in a pod. And that's the amazing thing about these kids of this age. They're so resilient. They're so aware. He knows to this day who his dad is. He knows that he's got his adopted mom, who is amazing, who is actually his grandmother. And he knows that he has two amazing foster parents who he calls mom and dad as well.
At just 6 weeks, Ryder had significant developmental issues that Jeff and Perry Lynn would have to take on.
Every child that goes into foster care here in San Diego County, and especially when it goes through the Polinsky Center, they have a developmental assessment that's done on them. So there's a team that comes in and looks at them physically, cognitively, and emotionally. And then they score them. And so in his case, he was scored the lowest on all the scales. So he was behind physically because he wasn't at the appropriate size and weight that he should be for his age. He was behind developmentally because he hadn't been stimulated appropriately in the first 6 weeks of his life. He hadn't been interacted with, and that also led then to the emotional side, which, you know, we talked about the trauma there. And this is the amazing things about kids 3 and younger, really, is that 4.5 months in our home, he caught up and or surpassed on all those scales because he was in the right environment, his needs were being met, and he was able to bond with another adult.
Jeff and Perry Lynn fostered Ryder for 4.5 months before transitioning him to his grandmother, who eventually adopted him. Another successful outcome for Angels. As they were wrapping up their experience fostering Ryder, an opportunity fell in Jeff's lap, one that would change his life.
So we were literally sitting at one of the final meetings that we had with our foster son and the care team that's surrounding him. So we had people from the county there, we had his grandmother there, we had therapists there, we had everybody like that. And just before we were heading into that meeting, our clinical case manager from Angels, and that's our social worker basically who manages our case, she just said, turned to my wife and I and said, "Oh, by the way, I just want to let you know that I'm not leaving." And both my wife and I looked at each other and said, "What do you mean?" And our clinical case manager said, "Oh, you didn't get the email?" And I said, "What email?" And they said, "Oh, our program director's leaving, our current executive director's leaving, but I just want to let you know I'm staying." And I just turned to her and I looked at her and I said, "You know, this is what I do. Do you guys need an interim executive director or somebody to come in and help with the organization?" And she said, "Yeah, I think the board has already interviewed a couple of people, but you would be interested in doing that?" And I said, "Yeah, I would. This would be great." And she goes, "Send me your resume." And so I sent her my resume. She sent it to the board member. And it was literally within the next 3 or 4 weeks, I had a phone interview. I had an in-person interview with some board members and then a follow-up in-person interview with the board chair. And lo and behold, they hired me.
That was 2013. And today, Jeff remains the permanent executive director of Angels. Angels' focus on kids 5 and under comes from the experience of Angels' founder, a woman named Kathy Richman, who is a case-appointed special advocate, or CASA for short, in the foster system.
She, as a CASA, had seen so many of these kids that were 12, 13, 14, and 15 in foster care. And these are the ones that were the highest need kids, the ones that were running away from their foster homes, the ones that were trying to set them on fire, the ones that were, you know, had tons of behavioral issues in school. She started looking at their records because, you know, she needed to know their history. And she realized that, wait a second, all this damage was done to these kids when they were in foster care at 3 and younger, and they were living in 5, 6, 7, you know, up to 19 different homes. And when you have failed repeated relationships or failed bonding with an adult caregiver when you're 3 and younger, that actually miswires your brain. So your brain learns not to be able to trust another adult. And so you fast forward then to young adulthood, young life, adult life, and you're more likely to have higher rates of mental illness leading to anxiety, depression. You have huge troubles forming relationships. And so what she saw and the reason she founded the organization was the foster care system in the traditional sense was doing more damage to these kids than helping them. And so that's why Angels was founded. That's why we focus predominantly on 5 and younger, because we know if we get these kids when they first come into the system and we can give them that stable, loving care so their brains wire correctly, that it won't necessarily guarantee them success later on in life, but we know that the system won't have done more damage, that they're you know, physically, emotionally, and cognitively, they'll be the best setup as possible.
With 60,000 kids in foster care, California has the largest foster population in the U.S. San Diego County is the fourth largest foster population in California, with about 3,500 kids in foster care at any given time. More foster kids than the state of Arkansas. 40% are 5 and under. And like so many other parts of society, the opioid crisis is having an impact on the local foster care community that Angels serves, making their work even harder.
We're seeing it encroach into California now. The drug of choice in San Diego has always been methamphetamine. And we learned much later that our foster son had been exposed to methamphetamine in the womb. We're now seeing the opioids take over, and that's the real sad one, because the one good thing, if there's any positive about methamphetamine, is it's quickly in the system and it's quickly out, but the opioid-based ones take much longer to get out of the system. And if you've ever seen a young child that's been exposed to heroin in the womb and what they go through in the ensuing, you know, 8, 12, 13, 14, 15 weeks after birth and what their body does, it's just heartbreaking.
But in the end, the biggest issue that Angels faces is simply finding enough parents willing to foster the growing number of kids coming into the system.
What we're focused on here within San Diego County right now is we want to make sure every time the county calls us with a child in need of a loving home, that we can find a home for them. Unfortunately, that hasn't been the case. Last year, we turned away 129 kids because we didn't have enough families available. And that's, you know, a whole other conversation about what the public's awareness of foster care is, what their perception of foster care is, you know, what they think is going on in foster care. And it's something we struggle with every day to make people aware of this great need.
So here's a question. Why should people foster?
My answer to that is, how could you not, knowing that every single day there are children that can't care for themselves that need a home? I say that, but I also realize that to foster, you have to be a little bit unusual. You have to have what we commonly refer in our organization as the disease, and that's the disease that you are willing to give of yourself to the point where you will break your heart in order to ensure that a child's heart is not broken and that they know how to love another human being.
Which brings us back to Johnny Stone. Johnny and Sarah ended up adopting their foster son Jackson in the summer of 2015.
You know, he has all these challenges in life by hitting all these milestones later and doing things. But I can tell you, no matter what, the girls and I were there and Sarah encouraging him every step of the way. And as frustrated as it was sometimes for us as parents to, you know, for him to be crying or for him to not be able to keep moving forward the way he wanted to and not understand him, it was even more frustrating for him. So the fact that he had us to understand and to have his back no matter what, I think truly molded him into the kind, loving little boy he is today. And we've provided him with that structure and that foundation that will only, it'll just promote him into the best version of himself. And we're here to make sure that happens. And we're always going to give him the love and the hope that he deserves.
The new family tackled Jackson's challenges together through unconditional love, a bond they'd need when, months after adopting Jackson, Sarah was diagnosed with cancer.
It was one of the hardest moments of our entire lives. But I tell you what, at that moment, we looked at each other right in the eyes and we said, you know what, we're going to stick together. And we made the promise to each other that no matter what, at the end of every day, in the beginning of every day, we're going to smile and find the good. Because there's, no matter how bad life gets or how challenging it is, there's always something good. And if you focus on it, it'll just make your life substantially better.
Sadly, Sarah passed away less than a year after her diagnosis. But Johnny powered on, raising his four kids with help from neighbors and a new nanny. In some ways, Jackson is helping fill the void in Johnny's life and in the lives of his three new sisters.
I will be the light that shines on you.
You know, I overhear them messing with him all the time, you know, they're running around chasing each other. And he just brings that joy that I was telling you about, that smile. Because even when they're having a bad day, they come home, they're greeted by Jackson right away. He just loves everyone. And so to watch them light up as he comes running to them because he's so excited, it'll melt your heart. in turn, that keeps them moving forward. That's their good in the day. You know, Jackson is a true blessing. You know, the fact that he's in our lives is just, it's breathtaking. He's made everybody's lives a lot better.
If the world breaks down,
and as for Jeff, his experience fostering Ryder had an equally profound impact on his family.
What we completely underestimated was the overwhelming positive experience that it's ended up being on him. I mean, it just blew us away. You know, they go through the same range of emotions that we all do when we foster. You know, when you start out, it's something new, it's chaotic. And then they bonded and, you know, fell in love with Ryder. Then when he left, they went through the same grieving process that we did, you know, that loss, that grief, that, you know, huge hole in your heart. And what kids do, and this is from firsthand experience, is they grieve a lot better than the adults. They get through it quicker, they understand it, and then they move on. You know, one of the most amazing things that I see today in my kids is they're still asking, you know, when are we going to foster again? And unfortunately, because I lead Angels, I can't foster now, although I know my wife and I will foster in retirement, or when I leave Angels someday, we'll foster again. But the kids have, you know, ask, when are you going to take another child? And when they realize that we couldn't do that, then they would ask, well, how many babies did you place today at Angels? Were you able to take care of all the kids? My two daughters actually come into Angels and will volunteer with my wife when we need daycare. We need somebody to watch after the kids while our parents are getting trained. My youngest son is still, he is the little big brother to Ryder. They are like two peas in a pod. So my son was just 6 and Ryder will be 4. They get together for play dates about every month. And, you know, they're like brothers. And it's just so amazing to watch.
Working on these two episodes on foster care, I found myself wondering several times along the way whether I could become a foster parent. And I'll be honest, the answer is no, at least not now. My wife and I just finished raising 3 sons to adulthood, and as much as we love that experience and love our kids, we're really enjoying our empty nest now. And I'm just not wired with that disease that Jeff talked about. I don't know that I'd be able to endure that level of heartbreak to help someone else heal. Maybe people like me are the reason there are more foster kids than parents to foster them. But Johnny recognizes not everyone can become a foster parent, and he was quick to remind me that there are other ways to help.
There's always something you can do no matter where you're at in the country to help a foster child. And so it's important that you explore those different avenues, because you don't necessarily have to be a foster parent to make a difference. I truly hope that everybody gets out there, they do good things. You know, the feeling you get when you do something for someone else without expecting anything in return is one of the best feelings you can ever have. And I truly hope that everybody gets to enjoy that feeling at some point in their life.
What's one thing you'd ask our listeners to do to make the world better?
I would just say have an awareness in your community. Know what the strengths of your community are, know what the weaknesses of your community are, and then know how best you can apply your skills and passion to help out with the need. I mean, I truly believe if, for example, in foster care in San Diego County, if every church, if every civic organization, Rotary Club, Lions Club, whatever, found one family in their organization that was willing to stand up and go through the process of becoming a foster parent, and then that organization collectively wrapped their arms and support around that family, we would never need foster families anymore, because we'd have more than enough. We'd have a glut of foster families. And that way, the kids of today would have a loving, stable relationship and know what it was like to have that. So when they grow up, they didn't replicate the same thing that maybe their parents went through.
I saw stars like a blanket. I saw people just like me. There was a light moving forward. I got the word and I got.
I'm Brad Shaw, and thanks for listening to this episode of Crazy Good Turns. Go to crazygoodturns.org to learn more about or donate to Angels Foster Family Network and to submit your ideas for extraordinary people and organizations we should feature. And stay connected with us between episodes by following us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like the music we selected for this episode, you can go to our website to stream a Spotify playlist of the full tracks. And if you're a band with a song we should consider featuring, you can submit it on our website too. This season, we're excited to announce that we're giving a $50,000 grant to the nonprofit that does the most to creatively spread their Crazy Good Turn story, a virtuous and self-reinforcing circle of gratitude. We'll announce the grant recipient at the end of this season. Also, we wanted to let you know that we're taking a little summer break for the next few weeks, and we'll be back with new episodes right after the July 4 holiday. Crazy Good Turns is audio engineered by Stephen Key. Music supervision and mixing by Scorescore in Los Angeles. And a special thanks to Megan Mason.
I got a dream over my shoulder. I got love tied around my waist. I got a big imagination. I got the world and I got you. I got the world and I got you.
You know, I'm just a small town farm kid. You know, grew up baling hay and working my tail off and turned into a sailor who is now out. I'm a single dad with amazing kids, and I can truly tell you that true love exists, and I'm here to show the world that.